And I asked the Rosh Yeshiva why we're making an exception. As many of you know, we have a lot of meetings. The Hanhala has a lot of meetings. And one of the things that we decided to do this year was to limit the amount of people that come repetitively over and over and over again from the various institutions that we're privileged to have here in Yeshiva. And for the Shana Bet guys, will tell you that at some point last year, the guys were like, Rebbe, we cannot go to hear them again. So we made a policy that we're only allowing certain people certain times. And I asked the Rosh Yeshiva what prompted him to make an exception in this scenario. So he said, Rabbi Glasser is the exception. He's a phenomenal speaker. He's somebody who has a tremendous amount to share, and somebody who every year when he comes has a real hashpa on the guys. So it's a big privilege for us to have Rabbi Glasser with us here this morning. Rabbi Glasser is somebody who has played a tremendous leadership role in Klal Yisrael over the last, 15, 20 years already, whether it was in NCSY, being a Rav in Passaic, being the head of the CJF in YU, somebody who gives Vadim in YU, has a lot to do with the guys in YU, the extracurriculars in YU. So it's a big schus for us to have Rabbi Glasser here with us today. And as always, open your hearts, Chaver, open your hearts. You never know what it's going to be this year that's going to penetrate you in a deep way that's going to make a meaningful difference in your year. So without further ado, it is a great cover for us to have Rabbi Glasser with us here today.
Good morning, everyone. That's a lot of pressure since I haven't been banned. I appreciate it very much, and I'll do my best. But it's really a tremendous kavod for me to be able to come and share some Divrei Torah with you, to be able to see you, to be able to be together with you. What an incredible year, what an incredible chance to be able to grow in Torah. This is my first one. This is my first stop on this tour. I landed last night. I took United, not because I don't like El Al, but it just makes me miserable. And I sat in what's called Economy Plus. Economy Plus is where you pay an extra $300 for a seat of what a seat used to be on an airplane, where you have enough space for your feet and your body and your arms. And I sat in Economy Plus and paid a little extra because I've been having back trouble. And the truth is that a couple of months ago, right around the summertime, I went finally to an orthopedist. You ever been to an orthopedist? You walk into their office, they have all these skeletons and things like that hanging from the ceiling. It looks kind of like a gallows, just with doctors. And so I walked into the orthopedist's office, and he does this whole exam, which basically is designed to make you feel much worse than when you walked in. And he bends this and cracks that and pushes on this and rubs that. And by the time he's done, he looks at me and he goes, "Okay, I have your diagnosis." So I said, "What's my diagnosis?" He says, "Your diagnosis is you're turning 40. So I said to him, "That's not a diagnosis." He said, "Listen." Then he spoke to me like I was like a kid in puberty. He's like, "Your body's going through some changes. At this time, you have to shift your workout regimen from the weightlifting to strengthening the core." And I looked at him and I said, "What part of my body looks like I am overdoing it on weightlifting?" And let me tell you something. I have quite a lot of mamushas in the core. There are two muscle groups that I focus on. This one right here, the biceps and the triceps right here. And these, the chewy muscles where the ligaments meet the bone right there. Those are my strong points. So he said to me, "You have to get in shape. This isn't an option." He sent me to one of those vitamin stores where you buy the shakes that don't quite dissolve, that have the little pieces in them, so you just hate yourself enough to keep drinking them. And you walk into the store, and there's a big picture of like the Incredible Hulk in black and white, and they tell you you're going to look like this man if you take this pill for $90 a pill. And you're walking around, and they sell you vitamins and shakes and all these things. And the truth is, this is the absolute worst time of year to start a diet, because it's Hanukkah, right? See, there are holidays where you can start a diet. For example, Pesach. That is a great holiday to start a diet, since everything tastes like cardboard anyway. So might as well start a diet. Anyways, when you buy something for Pesach, it's 80% air and then those little radioactive Cheerios at the bottom. Right? Unless, I don't know if you guys ever do this, my parents own one of those Pesach hotel companies. So I grew up going to hotels for Pesach for free. And, you know, when you go to a fancy hotel for Pesach, So then you eat well, right? Then you, it's like shibud ligula, right? It's like, you know, it's basically you go to the buffet, it's sort of like a petting zoo on the buffet. You have ducks and geese and lambs and this, and you just walk around tapping everything, and then you say goose, and you run, and they chase each other around with all the money falling out of their pockets, and it's really amazing. They sit by the towns, you know, Woodmere sits over here, Fonz sits over here, and LA sits over here, and it's actually 1 year we were in San Diego, and there was a lagoon, and we were kids, and in the lagoon, there were ducks, and we wanted to feed the ducks, but you can't feed them bread on Pesach, so we fed them matzah. So 2 weeks after Pesach, my father got a bill for 25 live ducks, which apparently are more expensive than the ducks you eat. So he called up the hotel, he's like, why are you charging me for ducks? They said, well, after your group left, all of the ducks died, and we were worried that something was wrong in the lagoon. So they went and they did an autopsy on the duck. I get Misaskim, didn't get involved. And they did an autopsy on the duck, and in every duck they found matzah, right? So they knew only one group was responsible for the matzah. So imagine what it's doing to us. So anyway, but Hanukkah is like the most amazing thing. It's just, I don't know how it happened, but it's like menorah, beis hamikdash, kedusha, tzmeim b'yad tahorim, giborim b'yad chaloshim, you know, miracles, nisim, parsume niso, what should we do? Donuts, right? Donuts. You could just see the chashmonoim looking down from above, being like, what? What is happening here, right? Where's the Yiddish, right? So, okay. So, it's basically a holiday that was put together by Shana Aleph, guys. And that's all we do. We eat donuts. It matter if the women put it together. It would be a whole holiday of frozen yogurt. So you have to be able to handle this. You have to be able to deal with the donuts. But I want to tell you, we all know that there was a lot of anti-Semitism involved in Hanukkah. In particular, whoever is responsible for creating those chocolate Hanukkah gelts, right? Whoever's idea it was to surround chocolate in a titanium casing, that I don't know if you've ever tried to open them, but you have to like peel off this tiny little corner. It always goes into your nail and cuts you. It's like, here's some Hanukkah gelt and a tetanus shot. You know what I mean? Like, and you finally get it open, and you're just praying that it's not going to have that white powder on it. You know what I'm talking about? The anthrax-flavored ones, you know? Where, like, they're from, like, 3 years ago, you know? And you're looking at the different things. And it's amazing to me, with all of the advances of Hanukkah technology, you know, where now, you know, used to be you had to make the wick and the oil. Now, then it was you break it open, and you kick it open. Now you just look at your menorah, and poof, it fires up, you know? But somehow we haven't conquered this. This is still, it's not a simple thing. But we all work on our things, we all do our things, and so therefore, I've decided that I will eat donuts, but my diet will be, I will only eat the part that's around the donut. I will not eat the middle. The middle, that will be the diet. The whole. So, we will see how that will go. But, Emir Tzasha. So I want to share with you some insights that transverse the world of last week's parsha and this week's parsha, and also bring us a little bit into the world of Hanukkah. I apologize. I'm supposed to have caffeine in my body, but I tried to stop and buy a Diet Coke over there across the street. Very complicated what's going on over there. There's construction. There is raw chicken. There is no Diet Coke. And that's wonderful for whatever goes on over here. I don't know what goes on. But you could get a live animal or whatever you need, but there is no Diet Coke. Then in the Burgers Bar, there wasn't Diet Coke, but then when someone asked in Hebrew, there suddenly was Diet Coke. But it was a glass, and it was open. It was very complicated. So I see that Baruch Hashem, the country is still Nikna B'Yisru. So the Torah tells us the following. We read in last week's parsha only a few minutes ago. The Torah tells us that Yaakov Avinu has this amazing dream. That Yaakov Avinu lays down to go to sleep. Turns out at the Makom HaMikdash, at the place of the Akedah. And Yaakov Avinu sees Malachim going up and down this ladder, flying up and down this ladder. And a promise comes, a prophecy comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and says to Yaakov, says, I'm going to be with you, you're going to inherit the land, you're going to build a nation, you're going to carry on the legacy of Avram and Yitzchak, you are going to build the Jewish people. Yaakov Avinu awakens, he says, I didn't even realize how holy this place was. And Yaakov Avinu has this reflection, this strength, and then he moves on. And the Torah tells us in the very next psukim, Vayisa Yaakov Raglo Vayelech Arza B'nei Kedem, Yaakov Avinu shows up and he sees a group of shepherds. He sees a group of roim. And what are they doing? This group of roim, the Torah tells us, are surrounding a be'er, they're surrounding a well. And there is a rock, there is a boulder on top of this be'er, on top of this well, and no one can move the boulder. That's what the Torah tells us. So Yaakov approaches them, and Yaakov says, Vayomer lehem Yaakov, and Yaakov is the original, Yaakov invents the concept of Jewish geography. He walks up to them, and the first thing he says, hey, Achai, me'ayin atem, where are you from? By which he obviously meant, which area of New York are you from? Vayomru mechonon anachnu. So they say, we're from Flatbush. So Yaakov says, Vayomer lahem, hayadatem es lovon ben nochor. Do you know, Shloimi? He sells insurance. Maybe it's mortgages, but I think it's insurance, right? Do you know lovon ben nochor? So they say, Vayomer yodanu, his daughter Rachel's coming with the sheep. Yaakov sees Rachel, and when he looks at Rachel, kasher roi, Yaakov is Rachel, vas lovon ochi imo, he vayigash Yaakov, he generates this superhuman Herculean strength, and what happens? Vayigash Yaakov, he comes close, vayogel es ha'even me'apia be'er, and he moves the stone from on top of the be'er. Three questions. First of all, number one, Yaakov Avinu is coming to us, is encountering this episode in the aftermath of one of the most spiritual experiences imaginable. Yaakov was sleeping at the Mokom HaMikdash. Yaakov saw visions of angels. And this is the aftermath? This is the echo of the famous Yaakov's ladder? This is what happens immediately afterwards? This is what we need to know. Oh, by the way, Yaakov was able to get to a well and dislodge a stone so they could feed sheep. That's the aftermath? That's the culmination of Yaakov Avinu's newfound legacy, of Yaakov Avinu's new emboldened religious personality, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you're the man? Yaakov Avinu, that's what he does with it? He goes and he moves a boulder? That's number one. Number two, let's be honest. Let's just take a moment to just recognize. It kind of comes across as a little bit of a cheesy love story. Right. He sees the girl, he's so enchanted, and now he can move the stone. It's like something you'd see on Lifetime at 3 p.m. on Sunday. It's not even prime time, it's like something iTunes would offer the rental right away, right, for $3.99. It's like mamish, like, what is this? Yaakov, this is how you want to introduce us to Yaakov Avinu? This is how you want to introduce us to the Shidduchim of Yaakov Avinu? This is how you want to relay the foundation of the relationship between the Avos and Imos, that Yaakov was so enamored with this woman that he was able to do, that he was able to show off and impress her with his physical strength? Where are all the things that we look for? That's supposed to draw in Rachel Imenu. Where are all the things that we look for in a spouse? What about the Yirah Shamayim? What about the ambitions and aspirations of who he's going to become? What about the foundations of his family? What about his values and ideals? All the things we look for in a spouse. And this is what we're introduced to. The very first moment of Rachel Imenu is Yaakov's strength. And finally, just simply as an accolade of Yaakov, it's puzzling. What Yaakov Avinu, he's a yeshiva guy, right? Yaakov learned in yeshivas Shem Ve'ever. For how many years? For how many years? 14 years. You know, the Shemin Atov says there were two yeshivas. One Shem and one Aven. Right? There was only one Bachar, but there were already two yeshivas. Right? Two open houses, two plans, two yeshivas. Right? The yeshiva you go to, and the yeshiva, oh, I don't go to that yeshiva. Right? Already this. This one had the better schedule, this one had not better schedule. Back and forth, yeshiva Shem, yeshiva Sever, two fundraising, whatever it is. Yaakov Avinu is 14 years in yeshiva Shem the Aver. And when he comes out, This is what we meet. This is what we find out. That what has he been? What has he been spending his time on? Was he at Night Seder or was he in the workout room? That Yaakov Avinu, by the way, he could bench press a whole boulder off of. This is Yaakov Avinu? It's very, very puzzling. So I want to share with you a thought that I heard that unlocks this entire episode and relates to this week's parsha. The Torah tells us when Yaakov Avinu approaches these shepherds. So Yaakov says to them, what's the problem? How come you can't move the stone? How come you can't reach the water, the life force, the sustenance that you need in this desert? And the shepherds look at Yaakov, and what do they say to him? They say to him, Vayomru lo nuchal ad asher ye'osvu kol ha'adar. They say to Yaakov Avinu, lo nuchal. It is impossible. It is not doable. It is an insurmountable challenge. Look at the boulder. They didn't try to move the boulder. They look at it and they say, lo nuchal. And within those words, lo nuchal, we discover the greatness of Yaakov Avinu. Because for Yaakov Avinu, there was no phrase in his vocabulary called lo nuchal. Yaakov Avinu's perseverance, Yaakov Avinu's strength and ambition and aspiration was limitless. And his ability to look within himself and to summon from within himself a sense of inner strength to confront the challenges in front of him, even if he sometimes fell, at the end of the day, there was no lo nuchal. And where did Yaakov learn that lo nuchal is not part of the personality of being a Yaakov Avinu? He learned it in the dream. Because in the dream, the Medrash tells us that Yaakov Avinu was confronted by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the angels were going up the ladder, down the ladder, up the ladder, down the ladder, says the Medrash, Sora shel Bavel, Olav Yori. The angel of Bavel goes up the ladder, comes down the ladder. Shel Madai, Olav Yori, shel Yavon, Olav Yori, shel Edom, Olav Yori, all these nations. They go up the ladder and then they tumble down. Amar Leah HaKadosh Baruch Hu LeYaakov. So God says to Yaakov, Yaakov, Loma Einata Ola. Yaakov, how come you don't climb the ladder? But also Shonis Yore Yaakov. Yaakov became very afraid. The Omar Kashem Sheyesh LeElu Yurida, Kach Ani Yesh LeYurida. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know why I'm not climbing the ladder? You know why I'm not reaching as high as I have the capacity for? Because I'm afraid I'm going to fall. I'm afraid I'm not going to be successful. I'm afraid I'll tumble down like the rest of them. Amar Le HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God says to him, Im ata ole, ein lecha yerida. I, God, am promising you, Yaakov, that if you climb that ladder, you will not fall down. So what do we expect? The great Yaakov Avinu? Okay. Express. Shoot up the ladder. Says the Medrash, v'lo he'emin, v'lo ola. Yaakov did not believe in what? Did not believe in himself, and did not climb the ladder. And the Medrash says, this ultimately is one of the reasons for the sufferings of Jewish history. What Yaakov learned that night sleeping in the Beis Elokim is that one has to be relentless at climbing the ladder. That when HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells you, if you put one foot in front of the other, and step after step, you climb, you will get there. And Yaakov emerged from that experience with a renewed commitment and perspective that there is nothing that could stand in his way. And in fact, the Psukim tell us that in this week's parsha, Vayivaser Yaakov Levado, Yaakov goes off on his own, and he has the famous wrestling match, the famous confrontation with the Soro Shel Esav, Ad Alos HaShachar, until morning, Vayar Kilo Yocholo. When the angel saw that he could not beat Yaakov, that's when he damages him. Because Yaakov Avinu never gives up. Because Yaakov Avinu does not define himself based on where he is. He doesn't define his life based on the circumstances in front of him. He dreams higher. He reaches higher. There is no boulder that is stronger than the capacity of Yaakov to summon that inner strength from within himself. And in fact, when the Malach names Yaakov, what does he say? He says to him, your name is Yaakov because you're a Sariso in Elokim with everybody. Vatuchal. That's the last word in the pasuk, because that's who you are. You have the ability to always reach higher, to always dream higher. And I want to tell you that that ultimately is what happened when the Chashmonoim walk into the Beis HaMikdash. The Chashmonoim walk into the Beis HaMikdash, Pnei Yehoshua says, they didn't have to do anything. They didn't have to make a menorah with pure oil. Tumah hutra betzibul. It was not halachically required. And yet their entire disposition, their entire attitude, their entire approach to life was that they sought greatness. Was that they did not allow themselves to be complacent, and they did not allow average to be good enough. They wanted to achieve the greatest of what they could achieve. And in fact, even though this miracle was completely halachically unnecessary, if everyone's tameh, you're allowed to use tameh oil in the menorah. We didn't need this miracle. Says the Pnei Yehoshua, Kadosh Baruch Hu does the miracle, Mipnei Chibason Shel Yisrael, because when God sees people reach higher, when God sees people not define themselves based on where they're from and based on where they are, but based on where they could be, when God sees Rabin Biyad Me'atin, that they didn't look at this formidable army, that the Greek army, and just say to themselves, we can never win. But they pushed forward, and when they walked into the mikdash, they said to themselves, a mikdash without a menorah is not good enough. We're reaching higher. That's when God comes down and does an amazing miracle. And that ultimately is the message of Hanukkah. The message of Hanukkah is the message of persevering beyond what's natural, beyond what's normal. Eight, l'mala min hateva. To be able to find within yourself kochos, strengths that you didn't know you had, to walk up to the boulders that cover the challenges of our lives, where we know underneath there is meaning, there is purpose, there is a sense of connection, there's a sense of achievement, but there are so many barriers in between, to walk up to that boulder and not to say, lo nuchal, I can't do it. Their language is too hard. The flow of the Gemara is too hard. The insights are too complex. The dedication and devotion is too much. But rather to approach it and to say to oneself that when you're fighting for something that you believe in, for something that means something, you're ultimately going to find a way to move that boulder and to move that rock. And that is ultimately what Hanukkah is about. You know, there's a machlokas in the Gemara whether or not we light the menorah from 8 to 1 or 1 to 8. Beis Shammai says we start at 8 and we descend to 1. Beis Hillel says we start at 1 and we ascend to 8. And the Maharal asks, we understand Malin Bekodesh, that we go up in sanctity. What does it mean that we go from 8 to 1? Why would we go from 8 to 1? Says the Maharal, because some people think that strength means to just throw out as much as you can. And then ultimately, whatever's there erodes in the face of challenge. Beis Hillel understood that discovering the strength within yourself, the greatness within yourself, is a process. It's a step-by-step, incremental process. And each step matters. That's why the image of Yaakov was the image of a ladder. Every step matters. I want to tell you a story. I am, my position at YU is endowed. You know what endowed means? It means someone gave a lot of money, sits in a bank account somewhere, and kicks off interest, and as a result, that funds the position. It's an endowment. And that endowment is in honor of someone. Someone who actually passed away a couple of months ago. The person who it's in memory of is David Mitzner. I'm the David Mitzner Dean of the Center for the Jewish Future. Who is David Mitzner? David Mitzner grew up in Warsaw. David Mitzner, when he was 17 years old, had a family, had parents, had siblings, and the war broke out, and the family got separated, and David Mitzner ended up smuggling goods across the Russian-German border. Eventually, he gets caught. He spends 7 years in a Russian prison. 7 years in a Russian prison. And he had no idea where his family was, where his parents were, where his siblings, nothing. The war ends, David Mitzner shows up in the United States of America with $17 in his pocket. He shows up in the United States. It's a whole miraculous story how he got out of Europe. He shows up in America, he gets a job, he has a good cup, he has a lot of ingenuity, a tremendous amount of luck, and David Mitzner ends up building a real estate empire. He owns hotels, He owns half of Houston. He's a very wealthy man. When the communism fell in Europe, David Mitzner went to Poland and began to buy up property in Poland. He built a tower. He built the tallest skyscraper in Eastern Europe. And from, he told me this himself, and from his office up in that tower, he can see the street where the Nazis ripped his parents away from his home. And that's his Nakama. So David Mitzner, last December, turned 100. Or a little bit before, in the summer, turned 100. I went to visit him around Hanukkah time, because they were honoring him at a dinner. Show up at his house. I sit down with him, and the man is 100 years old. And he is in great health. I actually walked in, and he was watching pro wrestling. Don't ask. Huge, giant screen TV. He was like, he's like, could you move? Yeah, whatever. Walk in, sit down, start schmoozing with him. And he looks at me and he says to me, Rabbi Glasser, do you know how old I am? And I said, yes, yes, I heard you're 100 years old. So he says, actually, I'm 100 and a half. I'm like, okay, you know, you don't argue, 100 and a half. And I walked out and something, it was like, something was bothering, 100 and a half. And then I realized, you know, when you have little kids, you try to tell your my little daughter that she's seven. She'll be, I'm not seven. I'm nowhere near seven. I am 7 1/8. Who's seven? Seven? That kid's seven. She's like, look at her. The immaturity is oozing from her. I'm not seven. I don't play with dolls. I play with puppets. I'm not seven. Who's seven? I'm 5 1/2. You ever meet somebody who's 40, right, and say, oh, I heard you're turning 40. Actually, I'm 38 and a half, right? That guy's a weirdo, right? We don't say that. That guy has other problems besides turning 40, right? That guy's got bigger issues. Who does that? Elamai, when do we want credit for the half? When we're a very little kid and life is in front of us and we want to show that we're getting older, and when we're very, very old and we want credit for each and every day. But everything in the middle, half is just a half. We're going 31, 32, 33, 34, 35, 36. You know what I learned from David Mitzner? Every half matters. Every step matters. Every mosif v'holeich, every candle matters, every rung on the ladder matters. Every day is an opportunity to grow higher and reach more to achieve the greatness that we see. And that ultimately is what Hanukkah is about. Hanukkah is about building towards eight, building towards the miraculous, step by step. By doing so one step at a time, one stage at a time. And this is ultimately our ambition in life. And this is what all of you should be thinking about. This year, beyond this year. And that is, what is the inner greatness that you are capable of? Do not evaluate yourself based on where you're coming from. Do not evaluate yourself based on where you are. Ask yourself, who could you be? What is the boulder that is standing on the well that seems so insurmountable? What is the ladder that is positioned with its head in the heavens that seems so frightening, so scary to climb? What is the half that you are so fearful of taking that jump? And find within yourself, that's what Hanukkah is about, find within yourself the inner ability to light a fire and be able to propel yourself forward. We all have the capacity for greatness in different ways. We're called a mamleches kohen. Everyone can be a kohen. Everyone has the capacity for greatness. For some it's in learning, for some it's in chesed, for some it's in midos, for some it's in the whole package, for some it's in leadership, for some it's in followership, for some it's in, there are so many different areas where we can grow, where we can achieve. But we cannot allow ourselves to succumb to sometimes what happens when we view ourselves as, it's enough, this is just enough. The push, the ability to say to ourselves, that's why Hanukkah comes in the winter. It's a perfect time in yeshiva's mind. Because it's already, it's getting, Well, you don't have cold, but it's getting colder, it's getting longer, Pesach's a long way off. And Hanukkah tells us, hold on, you have a whole other group of months here, you have a whole other 6 months. Don't just settle for whatever you're working on. Work to achieve the greatness that you know you can ultimately achieve. And wherever that greatness takes you, if it takes you to YU, beautiful. If it takes you somewhere else, beautiful. Wherever you can go to find your greatness, to find your inner capacity to achieve something incredible, that's where you should take your life. And ultimately, light that candle, illuminate that menorah, and make it for yourself a goal to climb that ladder, Shel Yaakov, and remove that boulder of the Be'er, and find yourself in the world that we know you could all ultimately achieve. Have a wonderful, wonderful Hanukkah and a great rest of this month.